about 1976, I probably have more reason than anybody to have some reservations about Governor Reagan. But the facts are, what happened in 1976 is not crucial in 1980. We're facing a different situation. The issue now is the failures of President Carter and the prospect of improvement under Governor Reagan. When you look at the record of the Carter administration, they have had a disastrous economic policy. As I said yesterday in Rhode Island, they've screwed up the economy. Inflation is still 13%. Interest rates are abnormally high. Unemployment is going up. Employment is going down. The economic picture for this country is potentially catastrophic, and it's President Carter's administration's fault. And I know, under sound Republican monetary and fiscal policy, we can do better. That's the issue. It's not whether we had an inter-party fight in 1976. I overlook any personal problems. I look at what the country needs in 1980. That's the crucial issue.
But Governor Reagan has been put on the defensive in his first main weeks of this campaign by his problems with China, Vietnam, evolution, Ku Klux Klan comments. What is your assessment of the national campaign so far, and specifically Governor Reagan's problem?
I believe that Governor Reagan can win. I believe he should win. And I think when the voters go to the polls on November 4th, Governor Reagan will win, because they will compare the disastrous economic conditions this country faces now because of the high unemployment, the high interest rates, the high inflation, and they'll want to change. Therefore, I firmly believe that on November 4th, Governor Reagan will win.
Your comment, President, on this one difficulty is in.
I happen to feel very strongly that we ought to discuss the issue. I'm not going to comment on some of the comments made by President Carter about Governor Reagan. I'm not going to get into the comments made by Governor Reagan outside of the issues. I'm going to do all I can to point up the issue, to point up the failures of the Carter administration, and I'm not going to get into what one said about another, which are really not what the American people ought to use as their guidepost when they vote in November 4th.
Mr. President, 4 years ago, you were credited with independence from Poland, somewhat prematurely perhaps, and that was widely considered at that time to be not helpful to your campaign. The Tuscumbia, Alabama statement a couple of days ago on the awkwardness surrounding the China trip that George Bush took earlier seemed to be similar kinds of things that don't appear to be useful in putting across the image of a man who knows what he's talking about or who has a fine touch for saying the right thing at the right time. Does that bother you in terms of watching this campaign unfold in the way Governor Reagan seems to be presenting himself now?
I'm glad you brought up the question of Poland.
Well, I don't want you what to use it as a trusted question.
I think I ought to be given a moment to make an observation on what some people said was a misstatement vis-a-vis Poland in 1976. What I said in 1976 was, regardless of the number of Soviet divisions that occupied Poland, the Soviet Union did not dominate the spirit of the Polish people. I think recent events have well proven that regardless of the number of Russian divisions in Poland, those courageous Polish people are strong and they eventually are going to throw off the yoke of Soviet military domination. The Poles have the spirit and the courage, and we should be proud of them. And what I said in 1976 is absolutely accurate when you look beneath the superficial Soviet domination by military arms. Now, I am not going to get into Governor Reagan has made a comment that might appear to be ill-advised. He should talk about, the American people should be concerned about the issue, the failure of the Carter administration to handle our economic problems wisely and well, and the failure of the Carter administration to do the right kind of a job effectively in the implementation of foreign policy.
Mr. President?
Yes.
As someone from out of state, what do you make of a situation where, regardless of the outcome of this primary, Senator Javits will be on the liberal line in New York, Mr. D'Amato, his opponent, will be on the conservative and right to life. What they're competing for is the fourth of four lines here. This is a very confusing situation.
I happen to be a very strong believer in the two-party system. I come from a state for all intents and purposes, Michigan, where the two-party system really is the only way you actively run a government. I certainly have many, many reservations about either a multi-party political system, and I certainly don't approve of a one-party political system. It is true that our two-party system hasn't performed 100%, but it's the best mechanism I know to run the United States of America politically. And therefore, I sincerely hope that the Republicans will use good judgment and nominate Jack Javits so that he can be the representative of the state of New York in the United States Senate.
But, Mr. President, you will support the Republican nominee, whoever he is, in New York State.
I intend to support Jack Javits because he is going to be the Republican nominee.
But if he is not?
I don't foresee that. I would fully intend to be out here to the extent that I can to help Jack Javits after he wins the nomination September 9th, is it?
I think it is.
Mr. President, you mentioned that you were glad to be in New York. When you come to New York, you can see a morning daily news. Are there any pangs of reflection on that famous headline, which many say cost you New York State and in effect cost you the presidency in 1976, the statement you in fact did not make?
Well, none of us are infallible. Even the best newspapers, and the Daily News is one of the best, make mistakes once in a while. And the statement attributed to Senator Pat Moynihan a month or two ago, I think is the best evidence that I never intended any harm to New York State. As a matter of fact, Pat Moynihan said, after adding up the record, that the Ford administration did more for New York City than the Carter administration has done for New York City. That's not a Republican statement. That's a statement by the junior senator from New York State, a Democrat. So I think in retrospect, the Daily News would probably have to admit that I didn't intend that, and the facts are I did not intend it.
Mr. President, back in Detroit at the end of the Republican convention, you said that by not being on the ticket, by not being the running mate, which is at the end of a rather awkward day, that you would be more free.
It was a good day.
That was busy. You said at the end of all that, whatever it was, that you would be more free as an independent operator to do what you wanted to do during the campaign. What are you going to do? Can you give us an idea of how you're going to spend
I started my campaigning yesterday in Rhode Island after a very delightful summer in Vail, Colorado. And I asked my staff to add up what I was going to do between now and November 4th, and let me give it to you. I'll visit 30 states. I'll appear in 29 congressional districts. I'll help in 14 senatorial campaigns, 4 gubernatorial races, and I'll appear on 10 different dates on behalf of the Reagan-Bush ticket. And I'll do a number of party activities for the state organization of the National Party. But having said that, let me add this. There is no race for the Senate or the House or for the governorship that I feel more strongly about than helping in any way I possibly can to see that Jack Javits is the next Republican nominee and the next Republican senator from the state of New York.
President, you were speaking before about the importance of the two-party system. How do you feel about the fact that a quote attributed to you has been used as the tagline for John Anderson's commercial about him being a man that, I think it's something like he's a man that puts conscience at importance?
Well, I'm not familiar with the quote that John's using. I'll say to you, as I've said to others, I have great admiration for John Anderson. He was my number two lieutenant when I was the Republican minority leader. I'll tell you what I told John when he called me to tell me he was going to run for the presidency as an independent. I said, John, that's a mistake of judgment. I still think it was a mistake of judgment. I believe in the two-party system. An independent, in my opinion, in particularly in the case of John Anderson, it's very likely that John's candidacy
badly impaired lately, especially in the failure to veto the so-called Jerusalem resolution of the United Nations. That was a very great mistake and very harmful to the future progress of those negotiations. I do not back away from the Camp David Accords or the Israel-Egypt peace treaty. That still represents the best hope for peace in the Middle East if we persevere. But if we're going to punish it and beat it up, like President Carter's action respecting the UN Security Council's resolution on Jerusalem, then I fear they're greatly in peril, and I sharply criticize the failure to veto for which the administration is responsible.
And so you heartily endorsed Ronald Reagan's criticism last night.
I have not read the full criticism of the governor, but I certainly endorse entirely the criticism of this action by the Carter administration.
And do you feel that this issue is going to be paramount during the campaign and turn a lot of traditionally Jewish voters away from the Democratic Party to the Republicans?
I cannot tell you that, but I certainly hope that all voters, whether of the Jewish faith or not, will see the need for a change in order to change the situation at home and abroad for this country, and will support Governor Reagan.
You've been very outspoken in the last few days, saying that this race with D'Amato is one of the most vicious that you've ever been involved in. Do you think you are in the political race of your life?
I don't think I'm in the political race of my life. I've had other political races, including early ones, extremely close. But I think the way in which the my opponent has waged this campaign. The issue which he's concentrated on has not been a very high level or helpful to the political process of which we're so proud in our country.
You're bringing in the big guns such as former President Ford. It would tend to indicate that you're a little nervous about whether you're going to win this primary.
President Ford's a very old and dear friend. And when I'm in a fight, I fight all the way with every friend that I have by my side. And I consider President Ford a most valued friend.
The cutaway.
Speak.
You stand on abortion. I am against the constitutional amendment, which will make abortion a crime. I'm with the Supreme Court decision on the freedom of the individual woman within appropriate time limits that the Supreme Court has set to determine what will happen to her own body. And I fully respect the scruples or conscience of anyone, doctor, nurse, orderly, or any other person, and have always been careful to see that no obligation is put upon any such person in respect of abortion.
ERA.
I am for the ERA, and I hope very much that it will be approved by the requisite number of states, and I will do all I can to help it be approved. I think it is high time that that be cemented into the Constitution of the United States, just like the woman's right to vote. 50% or more of women are now employed in the American economic system, and they're entitled to have a clear declaration of their equality. And it does not include a draft or serving in the armed forces, which Congress has full right to excuse women from and will.
West Bank settlements, should they be limited, restricted?
West Bank settlements, in my judgment, from the point of view of American policy, I'm not dictating to Israel, should be settlements which are necessary to Israel's security. Other settlements, I hope, in the course of the negotiation between Israel and Egypt, and I hopefully Israel and Jordan, with the United States as a partner, may be dealt in some way which will be agreeable to the parties. They should not stand in the way of an agreement to settle the whole West Bank situation. I believe in West Bank autonomy. That autonomy should be in the hands, however, of the inhabitants of the West Bank and must be consistent with Israel's security.
Economy, if there were, what sort of tax cut, if any, would you want to see passed?
The tax cut needed right now is a tax cut to bring about the modernization of the American business machine. And if we do that and start that process, we will get tenfold and maybe even a hundredfold in terms of the stimulus to the economy, to jobs, to the reduction of inflation, which will come from competitiveness and high productivity on the part of the American business machine, and which must be translated in a fair division of the pie between investors, managers, and labor.
All right, only two more questions. And just one implication of that. What sort of, how much of a tax would this be, this one you're talking about?
Well, I think we're talking, at least I'm talking about a tax cut in the area of $10 to $12 billion on business side. And on the personal side, 10% tax cut would mean about the same amount for individuals to deal with what's called the bracket creep. That is the fact that people get more dollars and go into higher brackets, though it doesn't change, or indeed, there may even result in a reduction of their standard of living, make up for the Social Security tax increase, which comes in 81.
Last one, jobs programs that the federal government sponsors and funds, you support them obviously.
Seeded jobs have been found the quickest way to employ employable people in the event of a severe recession. We've squeezed the bugs out of it, so you can't be permanently on seeded jobs, but only for a period of time. And in the absence of a better plan for the unemployed to use the time which their enforced unemployment gives them in education or upgrading of skills, I believe we have to use CETA as a medium. I hope that we won't need CETA if the business community does its job of training and education where unemployment arises because of cyclical forces, where you have a recession. But until such time, an element of the government's plan to deal with unemployment needs to be some element of seated jobs.
Thank you very much for your warm reception, and thanks to Tony for such a wonderful introduction. I came from Washington, where I've had a disappointing day, I'm sorry to say. We have a huge bill to help higher education, that is both the students and the institutions. And notwithstanding an all-day struggle, it was defeated by one vote, 44-43. I overstayed my time. I've missed all kinds of things today, but it just couldn't be done today. We'll do it, but we'll have to do it another day in another way. I mention that to you just to explain why I haven't been here earlier and why so often it's impossible for me to be where I'd like to be with my friends and my political supporters. You know a lot about everything I stand for. I won't bemuse you with that today. I'm delighted to join in the good fellowship and in the tribute to Tony Colavita. I haven't had much experience with Tony before this, but I can tell you that the one thing about a political leader that I admire is the courage of his convictions, and that when he says he's going to do something, he means it, and he delivers. I'm the same way myself, and I admire it the most in those with whom I deal. There are political leaders and political leaders, and we couldn't have a democracy without them. And when you get a man of integrity and that idealism, as demonstrated by this club itself, which is an inspiration in municipal government, and when you get a man who realizes that his job is to give to the people the best in terms of governance of which we're capable in our party. That includes the candidates, the policies, and the party leadership itself. I have unstinted admiration, and I express it with the greatest pleasure to all his friends. You couldn't honor a better man. I hope to grow to know Tony much better, and I hope that he'll be not only a bosom friend, but a man who will feel free to advise me, knowing full well that if I don't want the advice, I'll thank him and won't take it. But that it's extremely valuable to have that input from people whose motivation, integrity, and goodwill toward the fate of the people you trust. And I also, while I have the microphone, would like to say a word about Senator Pisani, who was here tonight. There are many public officials here, but I hope they'll forgive me if I just say one word about him. I am deeply honored if he does, and I hope he will, support me in this primary campaign. I have a remarkable relationship with Warren Anderson, whom we're so fortunate to have as the leader of the New York State Senate, just as Jim Emery is a splendid legislator and a splendid Republican and splendid American in his role in the Assembly. And I'd like to promise you, Senator, as I've told Warren, that it will be my honor and my purpose after Tuesday to devote myself to seeing that we hold the Senate and that we win the Assembly. I know a few issues a few times in the history of our state, facing as we do reapportionment, when this is more important to our party and to the future of the state. And I pledge you my every effort in that regard.
let me dispel any doubts that may be lingering in this audience today. I've done it before, and I did it several months ago upstate, but I want to now formally tell you that I'm expressing my enthusiastic endorsement for the renomination as a Republican candidate for the United States Senate for the state of New York, Jacob Javits. And let there be no doubt about it. I am considered another one of the so-called old-timers in politics. And I want you to know that I have met every single personage of the Republican Party that this state has produced in my 20-some-odd years in public life. Jacob Javits is one of the finest public officials the Republican Party has ever produced in the history of this state or in the history of this nation. He is a credit to our party. He is a man of great knowledge, great dignity, and great dedication, not only to the tremendous issues that are faced in the United States Senate, but also the important issues that face the state of New York in its relationship to federal government. I am proud to stand here alongside of him, and I urge you and anyone who may be hearing what I'm saying now or reading about what I've said tonight to vote for him in the primary and, of course, support him in the election. I want Jake Javits for another term in the United States Senate.
Yeah. Just one further word. For many years, I was a trial lawyer. And I'll just tell you one story. After the warmest thanks to Tony and all of his associates, to Senator Pisani and to all other officials who were here, I used to appear before a judge in Delaware whose name was Niels. And he had a very cavernous mouth. He was a very slender man. And Niels was wont to say, as he leaned over the bench, after you'd argued a particularly hot question, he was wont to say, "Counselor, if you stop now, I'm with you. Thank you all and good night."
Thank you very much, Senator. Each and every one of you again for your support tonight. And I just want to say, while he was saying those nice things, why was my wife laughing? Thank you.
Westchester should be a good county for me. I treasure the values of thinking and of orientation, which represents an enlightened point of view toward our country with a deep sense of responsibility for our security, of course, first and foremost, and then for our economic health and our social health, and then for the things which only America has done so well, really, in the world, and that is the care and thoughtfulness about those who are victims of the vicissitudes of life.
Senator, as you assess your constituency in Westchester County, what would you say it consists of most of it?
Well, I think Westchester is heavily professional, doctors, lawyers, business executives, small business, men, engineers, and so on, the whole panoply. Then, of course, there is an important working group in Westchester that now has an important industrial place of its own. And lastly, I think there are people who love the pleasures and tranquility of the countryside as close to New York as you can get to the city of it, and who commute into town. It seems to me, and they could be anything, range of employment, of
But I think the interest of the whole county is one of decency and one of a real sense of responsibility.
You use the words decency and sense of responsibility, and I think of this current campaign with you and Mr. D'Amato. And in recent memory, I cannot recollect a campaign when so much has been said of a negative or derogatory nature.
I can't either. I have had five statewide campaigns and four campaigns in a congressional district. And I have not run into this. I'm not surprised, nor am I taken aback. I'm much too experienced in public life to be surprised by anything. But it does present another equation than the one that I've pursued, where issues could be discussed. Occasionally, tempers might flare a bit, but generally over issues. It wasn't personal. But to be subjected to a personal attack in which there is a kind of an underlying theme of "I wish you were dead," Senator, it's a little hard to take, and I think completely out of character. American political campaign.
If we could move on from the campaign for a moment and get to what you call the issues, let us start first of all with the Equal Rights Amendment.
Well, I believe the Equal Rights Amendment, which will guarantee by the Constitution equal rights and equal opportunities for women, is essential because it's the substructure of the society, our Constitution. The women are already protected in terms of their voting. One might have said that the 14th Amendment and other amendments to the Constitution we call the Bill of Rights would have gotten women the vote ultimately, but they really got it, and they got it solid when they had an amendment. It's the same with this, and this red herring, which is all it is, you don't want women drafted, which is about all the ultra-conservatives have to say about it. Is entirely within the power of Congress. I am persuaded, convinced, and I'm a bad lawyer, pretty good record in the law, that the Congress may determine that women shall not be drafted. And they won't be, because this is a matter under the Constitution within Congress's power. And I do not believe that the ERA amendment would therefore require that women be drafted. But in many other things, such as laws which restrict women and which have survived Supreme Court challenges on constitutionality, there's great discrimination in many areas of the country and in many of our states and local governments, which should be redressed by as major a piece of law, the supreme law of the land, as we call it, embedded in the Constitution.
Moving on to another issue facing women, federal funding for abortions. Mm-hmm.